We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the podcast. The Pelicans re-signed Drew Holiday and have sat around with their thumbs up their butt since then. It's very exciting. Mike, are you excited by thumb butt sitting?
Well, I was told today that they're just waiting on your rap, and then they'll get back to work.
I was only a few million short. Five, six, something like that. Nothing big.
I mean, but as you're starting to see how the rest of the market played out, don't you think, I mean, once we see what George Hill gets and some other guys, if I would have showed you, let's say, Darren Collison and Patty Mills is and whatever George Hill's contract was 2 months ago, would you have guessed that Drew would have got more or less than what he actually did get?
I'll be honest. Drew got from the Pelicans exactly what I thought they were going to offer him all along. So I thought that's what the Pelicans was going to put on the table. And my theory was the Pelicans were going to give him that offer. Somebody else and almost all the teams that could have done this went and drafted point guards or went and got a point guard another way and would have slapped down a deal to beat it, which would have been near max, and the Pelicans would have said, we'll match it.
So let's talk about the contract a little bit. It looks like 5 for $125, could go as high up to $150 with some incentives that he pretty much going to be impossible, most likely, for him to achieve. So let's just say 5 for $125. The fifth year is a player option. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like he got a no trade clause. So something that was something you were insisted on. And then it also sounds like, according to a couple people, that the reason that he had to sleep on it the night before is he did want to play with his brother, Justin, but you know, the Pelicans were willing to pay Drew handsomely, but they wanted some flexibility of options with the rest of their money. So no Justin Holiday. I guess the goods, the bads, the others, just your overall thoughts on Drew Holiday's contract and the Pelicans re-signing him.
So overall, I think it is a perfectly satisfactory outcome. I don't even feel like he's dramatically overpaid. He's overpaid in a free agency style but it's not like a crazy overpay. Does that make sense? Like everybody who enters the free agent market usually gets overpaid a little bit from what they're worth if they're signed within the first week. And then after that, it starts to decline. So I think he's a little overpaid. I don't think he's a lot overpaid for what his production on the court will be. There are other players I would prefer for that money, but they weren't people we were going to be signing anyways.
Here's one thing. So the argument that has been stated from national media and then kind of dripped down to a lot of fans was that the Pelicans had no choice. Even if you listen to the Arnovitz podcast with Lowe, you listen to Duncan's recap, et cetera, they basically just keep going on and on about how the Pelicans only had $13 million in cap room. They had no other choice. They were stuck between a rock and a place. But how much weight do you think that argument really has? Do you think the Pelicans were really boxed in? Now that we've got to see what the market is doing a little bit, do you think they were really boxed in to the point where if they didn't re-sign Drew, they were severely risking this upcoming year and being a good team and a possibility at a playoff team?
No, they weren't. But I will say that so if Drew walks, and the $13 million is a real number, but what it completely ignores is that the Pelicans can make moves to clear up other space, and some of those moves wouldn't be that painful. Like stretching Oshik, it's painful for the Benson family, but I am sure that they would be willing to do that if you could go out and get a pretty good player, and that frees up enough space. You could be in the conversation for George Hill with no problem. $13 million, for all I know, at this point, might be enough to get you in the conversation for George Hill for a couple-year to two- or three-year contract, because he's the one who got left out. Now, is George Hill way better than Drew? No, he's older. He's probably going to decline a little bit. He's a little bit better than Drew. He does certain things better than Drew that I like. But
he's willing to take a one-year deal?
He's apparently willing to take a one-year deal with the Lakers. But, yeah, I mean, if you could put a nice-sized deal down the table, you could have gotten George Hill. And as far as talent level goes, he's, in my opinion, almost equivalent of Drew with more of a likelihood of declining than Drew. That's essentially what you're getting. So, and honestly, we talked about this other option, too, which was Drew leaves. What about other guys? Danilo Gallinari is out there. He could be your primary ball handler on a pick-and-roll attack. He does that in Denver all the time. And so you could have gone and gotten Danilo Gallinari and then just filled in with, you know, other guards who are at lower price around him. You could have done that. It's not out of the, you know, question to do something like that. So they were not at all cornered. But I think they did feel like Drew was their best option at point guard. Do you think that that's true? Do you think that when they looked at the list of point guards that were available out there and they ranked them, and so, you know, that includes Kyle Lowry, and of course, you know, Curry's not going to be on the table. There's no way he was leaving Golden State. Do you think that he was the top of their list of point guards?
I do for the timeline. I think they would Truth Serum say that Kyle Lowry is obviously superior, but if they're really under the belief that they could keep AD and Boogie together, Drew's age fits the best. I mean, I get it, but again, just say that, you know, Drew Holiday is a good player and you think that he still has growth. Like, there's some arguments I don't mind. The one that they had no other choice, that's the one that drives me nuts. I mean, you don't think that if they call Minnesota and offer Quincy Pondexter and their first-round pick for Rubio, which they would have been able to do, they would have had enough space to do it. You don't think if they offer that, Minnesota takes that deal over the Jazz deal with that pick much more likely to be outside of the lottery? Like, I think they would have taken that in a second. So then all of a sudden you take Rubio in, and then, yeah, you know, you lose your exceptions, and you're basically just dealing with the room at that point. But You know, you've got your point guard in Rubio. Darren Collison went for about $10 million, so there's some cap space that you could have used. I mean, I've always said that the best option for next year is re-signing Drew Holiday. If we're only looking at next year, but man, this really locks you into this team. And I've seen people say, well, you know, if you get a chance at a superstar, you could get off of Drew Holiday's contract. I just really don't know about that. I don't know if he has, let's just say, not an injury plagued year, not a career year. Let's just say he has an average Drew Holiday year, which is about a 16-17 PER, which is inefficient on the offensive end, but good on the defensive end. Let's just say he has that year and he has 4 years, $100 million left. Do you really think that you could just give that away, especially as we see less and less and less and less teams having cap room?
So I'm of two minds of this. I would say no. I would say no one's taking that money into space. I don't think that's the case at all. I don't think you could go to Brooklyn, who I don't even know what their cap space situation is right now. I think they have like $18 million, but might be more. And you could say, I'll give you Drew Holiday after that kind of situation, and they would take him. I think they would try to get something more out of you. Unless they think for some reason, like, I can see that maybe being, if Philly had not been able to get Markel Fultz, if they had not been able to trade up and get Markel Fultz, maybe you could have done it with them, but this is situational. This is a team that's looking for a veteran point guard leader who's not too old. So how many people are going to be like that? There's not a lot of them. So on that hand, I would say no. But then I just got to take a second and point out that Oladipo, in my world, is worse than Drew Holiday. He's never going to be better than Drew Holiday. I've watched him play enough. I feel pretty comfortable saying that. And he was making $21 million a year for the next 4 years, and he was traded as part of a superstar trade. And I understand the Pacers had some emotional crap going on there, but the fact remains that it happened. So you can't just say there's no way that Drew could be involved in a trade like that. You can maybe find a place, a landing place. I don't think that, however, putting Drew in will suddenly take your, because of his big contract, will suddenly take your offer and make it awesome. If you were paying Drew $11 million like you were last year, and you put that Drew Holiday and that Drew Holiday contract in, suddenly you're going to be jumping up the scale of good offers. But that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So, I think at this point, rather than looking at him as an asset, you've really got to look at him as your third guy. Maybe you could add a 3A to his 3B or vice versa, whatever, and he could kind of be that third guy or fourth guy, share that. I think that's about as good as you could possibly hope for.
Hey, I just thought of something. Tell me if you can. So Drew was drafted, what now, 6-7 years ago? So we just have to find out whatever GM at the time was in love with Drew Holiday at the draft. Because Oladipo, Buddy Hield, and what's his name? Chris Dunn. They all netted superstars because the GMs loved those guys when they were coming out of the draft. So that's all I have to do. We have to go back 7 years and find the GM who really loved Drew Holiday, which might be harder than I'm saying because I think he went 21st, was it? Or is he 17th?
No, so whatever, 17th. So I think Collison went 21 that year to us.
Yeah.
But, whatever GM or owner or whatever GM was in love with Holiday that year has probably been fired by now. So, I totally get it. I don't need to be explained the situation of, you know, how re-signing Boogie next year is important. The West just keeps getting better and better. It's one of those situations where Denver I mean, Denver, Minnesota, like you've got these non-playoff teams from last year looking like juggernauts, and you could argue maybe two or three of the playoff teams might get a little weaker, you know, but a lot of the non-playoff teams are getting better, and it's just, it's going to be a fight again where I would say 12 teams in the West are going into next year really thinking that they are surefire playoff teams. Like, who are the only ones that probably, I mean, you could probably say Sacramento, Phoenix, and the Lakers. They, you know, other than LaVar Ball, nobody thinks that one of those three are going to make the playoffs. The other 12, maybe Dallas. You could count Dallas.
I think you could put Dallas in there.
So there, but there are 11 teams that are trying their absolute hardest to make the playoffs. There's only 8 spots. And, you know, of those 11 teams, there's enough talent to make the playoffs on all of them. So I could totally see the other side of, look, if you don't re-sign Drew and you try to just be good enough and save the flexibility for a star, you are really, really risking missing the playoffs. And then if that happens, how confident are you about re-signing Boogie? So I totally get it. I just think it's just another situation in which I find it hard to believe that there was a close offer. My argument always with the Oshik offer was that, you know, show me the second best offer. And I would love to know that with Drew. And it cracks me up, all the PR spin of, you know, Drew was really happy with how the Pelicans, you know, handled his wife's situation, and he feels loyal to them. Like, really feels loyal, so he took more years and way more money than anybody else, but you're going to try to sell me on the loyal? I mean, if you had to guess, it looks like when everything cleared, the last two teams kind of in the bidding for Drew Holiday were Indiana, who we just saw get a point guard for 2 years, $20 million. They didn't even go back after Hill. You know, they didn't really go after any of the premiers. Indiana and then New York, who has about 18, 19, 20 million in cap room. Obviously, they could do other stuff, but that's what they have. What would you think the second best offer was for loyal Drew?
I actually would have expected that the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I know they went and signed Teague right off the bat, but I'm willing to bet there was, because there was those things people saying, people around the league are feeling more and more certain he's going back to the Pelicans. And most of that, I'm sure, were people like asking teams like the Timberwolves, you interested in going for him? They said, we reached out to his agent, and I'm sure the agent said, well, New Orleans has putting down $25 million just to try to drum up whatever he could for offers. I am sure that if that hadn't happened, that Minnesota probably, and it was clear that Drew was going to go somewhere else or could go somewhere else, that he probably could have gotten like 3 years, $70 million from Minnesota.
So the second best offer was 2 years and $55 million less, and potentially, I know he's not going to reach those incentives, but 60, 70, $80 million less. I mean, that's what I'm saying. This just cracks me up about the, he was loyal and this and all and that. And again, you know, I don't know how much it's Dell bidding against himself and or just the New Orleans market or the ownership or the stench of all the losing seasons is just, you know, we just saw Kevin Durant take a huge, well, not a huge, but I mean, actually it was huge.
It
in
was
context.
Huge. It was $9 million. I mean, it was probably what, 20% of what he could have made.
Yeah. And I mean, even before that, he got to re-sign with Oklahoma City for a lot. So, I mean, he's left on the table, you know, probably at the end of the day, it's going to be close to $30, $40 million to play in Golden State. We saw what David West did. Like, I guess the point is New Orleans is not getting any discounts. You know, from the higher tier players or even the mid high tier players. And it's just one of those situations where I don't know if Dell is just a terrible negotiator or if he just has to, you know, pay a 10, 15, 20% premium, to keep guys because of several different factors with the organization. I mean, I I think Dell is a pretty smart guy and he knows the market, but man, wouldn't it be nice to be a fan of one of those teams that doesn't have to way overbid and overspend to keep people, or just risk losing them and wind up losing them for free like you do with Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. It's just it's one of those things that just gets you down a little bit, because you feel like if Drew Holiday was in the same situation with two top 15 player big men that every guard should want to play with, and it was in a city and with an owner that, you know, NBA players or he specifically just loved, you could imagine that he would have really taken a discount. But it just seems like the Pelicans had to pay a very high premium to keep a guy who's supposedly so in love and so loyal to the franchise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess it could be worse. Like, so let me ask you, because you said that just now about losing Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon for free. And we also spent a lot of time before they left talking about how there isn't really much of a market to get either of those players from anywhere. But you know, maybe we could have gotten the first for Ryan Anderson. It wouldn't have been a good first, but I think there's suggestion that that offer was out there.
It would have been a Cleveland 2018 first, which you're right, wouldn't have been great. But wouldn't it have been nice to have in the war chest right now as we're going out trying to get other guys via trade?
Yeah. But so what do you think of what happened like in Atlanta? Do you think Atlanta, what is it, like 4 years ago, 3 years ago, won 60 games, and every single player on that team is gone, and the only thing that they have to show for Kyle Korver, Damari Carroll, Al Horford, Paul Millsap, and Jeff Teague is what, like one pick from Charlotte?
Torian Prince, the 12th pick they got for Jeff Teague. Yeah, Torian Prince.
Like, do you think that's an utter disaster, or do you think it's okay that they played them out and tried to win more games? Or do you think that whoever was in charge of that should be fired?
So, I have probably more inside info about Atlanta than any other team, so I know exactly what went down. But this is how fickle the NBA is, and this is how thin the line is between genius and then utter catastrophe. So, the plan was that they were going to re-sign Horford, and then they had a package deal all ready to go to Denver where they were going to get multiple picks. They were going to get young guys. And then, you know, essentially they would have their team plus would have reloaded their picks. And up until the last minute, they thought Horford was going to resign. But he was insulted that Atlanta wouldn't go to the full 5-year max. They offered him 5 years, but it was like, this is a similar to the Harden situation. It was like around $6 million less than the full max. So he would have made more money there than he's probably going to make 4 years in Boston and then the fifth year when he's over the hill. But just because Atlanta wasn't ready to go all the way, last minute he switches, changes his mind. Now the Hawks need Millsap, so they pull him off the table on the Denver trade. They were actually playing Denver and Phoenix against each other, and they were going to have a very healthy package for Millsap. And then all of a sudden, just that one decision by Horford starts all these dominoes. Atlanta, you know, like you said, barely got anything. Denver winds up getting him for free and gets to keep all of those prospects and picks. So, it's so easy to just sit back and look at the results and bash on GMs or praise them. I mean, again, the Golden State GM wanted DeAndre Jordan. Like, they wanted Dwight Howard. There were so many different times that if they would have gotten unlucky or gotten what they wanted at the time, they would have never put together the super team that they have now. So, you know, none of these guys are dumb, but none of them know the future either. They're all very flawed humans, and sometimes luck really plays in a ton.
Okay. You didn't really say, do you think what happened in Atlanta is a disaster? Or do you think it's okay that they can just reload from where they are?
The results are, if they could go back in time, they would either give Horford the max or would have traded him the February prior, and then, you know, and then just blown it up then. But, it, you know, it's so easy to look at the results, and every fan is a genius because they have the results in hindsight. My whole point is that it's not that easy as a GM. And sometimes when you gamble big, you know, and try to do multiple things, and one small domino falls the wrong way, and then you're on a completely different path. So, yeah, the result was a disaster, but I don't think these GMs are dumb. Sometimes, like the situation I just explained, they just have bad luck.
Okay, let's switch gears. New Orleans Pelicans.
Hold on. One last thing before we get off of Drew.
Sure.
Is it possible that he lives up to this contract? I mean, we've seen Mike Conley right around this age make a jump. We've seen Drew flirt with jumps in periods these last 2 years where there's two-month stretches where he is playing like an all-star. Is it possible that he is a 19-20 PER guy? He gets more efficient, that he basically takes another step in his career. Well, of course it's possible. What percentage chance do you think there is that now the wife situation is off his mind, the Pelicans are going to tell you in a couple of days that he's in the best shape of his life, yada, 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 and he's got these two bigs to play with? What are the odds that Drew makes a leap similar to Conley right around this time and actually lives up to this contract or comes pretty close?
I'm going to give you a two-tiered response.
Ooh, dos tiros.
So if he does not get a skilled wing compatriot, I think that the chance is somewhere around 15%. I think if the Pelicans somehow manage with their limited assets to manufacture someone who can make his life a little easier, and he won't be having to force crap so much, then I think it's closer to 40%. I think he is a player who is asking him. He basically has several weaknesses in his offensive game that we're asking him to do a lot of the time. And I think that if you can make that a little bit less often, that suddenly the rest of his game will shine. He'll be able to do more of what he's really good at. And I think that he could end up being the kind of guy where everybody's like, hey, that guy's really good. And, you know, every single year the Spurs would make it to the playoffs, like the first two or three years where Manu was coming off the bench, and people would be like, oh yeah, there's Manu. That guy's really good because he's in just the right spots and doing everything he like amazing out there, and he's just doing what he's really good at in a limited stretch of time. And I think if you could do the same thing with Drew, if he had Tony Parker running next to him, I think Drew would be a fantastic guard. What do you think? Think I'm stupid?
No, I mean, to me, it's just wondering if he could do that consistently. I mean, the fact that we've seen these spurts are what are more discouraging to me than anything. I mean, we have seen times where, I mean, Drew has looked explosive, where he's just jammed on people. We've seen times where he just gets red hot from three and the game looks so easy from him. And there's just, you know, and again, I hate going back to CP3, and I'm not comparing him to CP3 as far as the level of talent or passion, whatever, but I knew what I was going to get game in and game out from CP3. Like, I could write you that script right now. It's been years, but I could remember. He was going to start the game off heavy pick and roll, getting others involved. He would have 6 to 8 assists by the half. He would get other guys started. Then in the third quarter, he would come out and just be draining mid-range jumpers and threes, looking for his own offense to suck the defenders back up on him. And then he would do a dose of both, and he would be clutches all hell at the end of the game, either with the perfect pass or making the shot himself. Like, I knew what I was going to get game in and game out. The weird thing with Drew is sometimes when guys go under, he'll pull that three all game. And then the next game, you know, he won't shoot it at all. And sometimes he'll be explosive to the rim. Other times, you know, he just settles for that mid-range. Like, there's no consistency, not just in his stats, but there's no consistency in his process or how he tries to play. It's just so confusing to me. And, you know, I think he has the potential. I think for a month or two at a time, he could be Conley. I just don't know if mentally, you know, he could stick in that zone and just turn in to that player. I think he's always overthinking, doubting himself. And I just don't know if you could change that.
Yeah, I think when you say that, and I 100% agree with that's exactly how I would describe his game. But you know, if you can get it, I don't know. Can you change that kind of mentality? Can you send him to a sports psychologist and have him suddenly realize, you know, they're giving me this, I should always do this kind of thing, rather than sometimes do this and sometimes do that? Like, I don't know.
All right. Well, I guess it's just a whole bunch of I don't know, but, it's been interesting. The Pelicans brought him back. I think at least for the short term, the possibilities are endless now. Not endless, but the upside is there. I think they have an inside track as a playoff team. Like I've always said, bringing Drew back, keeping all the exceptions, operating over the cap, using the MLE, et cetera, gives you the chance to have the best possible team this year. So I guess it's just accepting this contract and moving forward and talking about and thinking about what the Pelicans could do the rest of this offseason to get themselves a roster that could compete for the playoffs with the 11 teams in this loaded West.
So let's just stop there before we go to any more possible things they could do. Let's just say, and you talked about this before with Atlanta, they have all these great plans, but the dominoes just don't fall the way they need to for any of those plans to come out. So let's say the Pelicans sit there and they had all these great ideas, but in the end, all they're able to pull off is re-signing Dante Cunningham, going out and getting some backup point guard, like, you know, I don't know, Ramon Sessions or someone similar of that level of talent. And they get a middling wing player who's not going to be much of an impact. Let's say like Justin Holiday would have been, but Justin Holiday, does it annoy you that Justin Holiday only got $4.5 million? Would you have signed Holiday to that contract?
Not at this point, no. Okay. I think you have so many possibilities. I mean, the Pelicans could even get creative and operate under the cap. So at this point in free agency with all the options, no. Maybe ask me 2-3 weeks from now and if I didn't really get to use all my stuff. But right now, I only make a move or sign or trade for a guy if I know he's going to be top 6 or 7 in my rotation, because I know I could get 8th, 9th, 10th men down the line. So I do not use a portion of my cap or exceptions or anything for just a mad guy, even if it's going to be a slight value.
Okay. So, but let's finish that scenario. That is what we go into next year with. So, Oshik's still on the team. Diallo's still there as hopefully our power forward. Ajinsa's still roaming around somewhere. Like, this is the team that we have. Is that a surefire playoff team? Or a likely... I know, again, this is the West where, you know, stuff's crazy. Is that a surefire playoff team, a likely playoff team, or maybe not a playoff team?
To me, I can't say this enough. You give me AD and Cousins for 70, 75 games, and they've meshed, any version of the Pelicans of the playoff team. Like, I get that the Pelicans, or that the West has a lot of good, solid teams, but I think people are looking at it too much as of a collective. Like, I keep seeing this thing about how all these all-stars in the West, and the West is just look, but I see one great team, and I think, you know, there's maybe a couple that are probably in the next tier if everything goes right, but I honestly don't see a team that if AD and Boogie, I'm talking about really, really click, I do not see a second team that I'm saying they will definitely be better than the Pelicans. I just want to be sure I'm really being clear on this. I'm not saying the Pelicans are the second best team. I'm just saying I don't look at anybody else in the West right now and go, well, even if AD and Cousins click and, you know, that reaches its full potential, the Pelicans don't have a chance of being better than them. Like, I feel that way about Golden State, obviously. I can't say I feel that way about any other team. So, yeah, there's a lot of collective talent in the West, but you just starting looking at it one team at a time. You know, even if the Jazz bring back Hayward, if the Pelicans and the Jazz play up to their top levels, I think AD and Cousins are the two best players on that court. You look at the Timberwolves. Okay, they got a collection of talent. Can Wiggins shoot the three? Nah. Can Butler? No. Is Teague an up-and-down head case who doesn't really play defense? Yes. You know, they've got, basically, to me, they've got Karl Anthony Towns, but still, Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins are the best player on that court. You know, Portland, except, like, you go through all those teams individually, and you say, if AD and Cousins are clicking, who are the best players on that court? You know, San Antonio has probably a better player. Oklahoma City, it's interesting, those two, how they're going to mesh. But I think it all comes down to that. And if those two click, I think the sky is the limit. If Golden State is above the sky,
right.
You know, the sky is the limit for this team. So I really think they're a playoff team no matter what, no matter how this roster shakes out. If you give me 70, 75 games where both AD and Cousins are playing and, like I said, they click.
Okay. But I don't know if I'd be quite as high as that. Because some of those teams that you sort of dismissed, I don't know if I would say. Well, because you were qualifying all of them, so.
Yeah, I mean, and dismissed or like saying, yeah. I'm not saying they're terrible. I'm just saying one team has to be better than the other.
Right.
And a team with AD and Cousins, even if I wasn't a podcaster or writer for that team, like if that works, that's better than, you know, I had a guy on Twitter saying Minnesota is going to be better because they have an above average starter at every position and we don't. It doesn't work like that in the NBA. If you have all eights across the board and my team has two tens and then the rest of them are sixes, and so your total is 40 and mine's 38, I'm still going to beat you with the two tens and the three sixes. Like almost every time the NBA, you know, I know people look at rosters on paper and go, oh, wow, they got Wiggins and Button. They're all above average. It doesn't matter. If you have two dominant first team all NBA players, the other three guys on the court matter very little. And the other three guys on the court for the Pelicans, I'm telling you, when this summer's over, aren't going to be sixes. They're going to be sevens, possibly eights. So I'm not dismissing those teams. I'm saying that if AD and Cousins click, how many other teams have two potential first-team All-NBA guys on their team? How many can you think of? The Warriors, the Cavs, who else would you say have two potential All-NBA first-team guys?
OKC and Minnesota.
Who on Minnesota?
I'm a huge fan of Jimmy Butler. And Cat has them, but I don't think Cat will this year. But I
think people would have to die for Jimmy Butler to ever make first team All NBA.
So yeah, okay. I mean that's the in a vacuum. And yes, I know DeMarcus Cousins could be first team All NBA because he's a big man. But in a vacuum, I would take Jimmy Butler over DeMarcus Cousins. I think he's a more impactful player.
Okay. Yeah, and again, it comes to fit and how everybody works out. I mean, I'm not a big Minnesota fan either. With their roster construction, I love it from a talent standpoint, but not from a fit standpoint.
Well,
but anyway,
what's really funny about Minnesota, and this, I mean, we'll have a lot of time, I'm sure, we'll circle back around and talk about all these teams. But what I think is really funny about Minnesota is they brought in Jimmy Butler, who's a good defender. They lost Ricky Rubio, who's probably top four defensive point guards in the entire league, and brought in Jeff Teague, who's a terrible defender. And now people are like, oh, yeah, they'll be a great defensive team. Last year, they were, what, third from the bottom? It's basically like the Pelicans, not last year, but the year before, thinking, oh, we brought in some, you know, a moderate upgrade at one defensive position, and suddenly we're going to be moving from 25 to top 10. And no, they're going to still be terrible defensively. Terrible.
Yeah, and Jimmy Butler was a good defender when he was a role player and not high usage on offense, and he had energy to give to the defensive end. Now that he's a high usage guy that's scoring all the time, he is no longer an elite defender. So, I'm not really scared. I mean, even up to the San Antonio level and Houston, which I want to talk about later, like, again, if AD and Cousins click, I don't think they're the clear underdogs to any team in the West outside of Golden State. But that's still a big if, if those two guys can learn to play together this summer and play off of each other. Cousins keeps in shape. AD, you know, keeps out of the training room and having to go back to the locker every third game. So it's still a big if. I'm just saying it's an if that can happen.
All right, so let's jump to going forward. So the first thing I want to point out, and you alluded to it earlier, so just want to make it really clear to everybody, Drew has not been signed to this contract yet. He has agreed to this contract. So the Pelicans still have all the ability to do anything that they want to with their cap that they feel is necessary. So if there is a way that they can make a trade, they can move people, they could still operate below the cap, they just have to figure out a way to make that salary fit and make that re-signing of Drew happen, as long as they keep in mind that he has a $16 million cap hold. That's the most important thing. They have to keep that there. As long as that's on their cap, they can do whatever other changes around it and still sign Drew to this contract. So they still have opportunities to do several different things. They can make trades. They can cut you know, Oshik down with a sign-and-trade, or not a sign-and-trade. Why would I say sign-and-trade? That'd be hilarious. A waiving of him, and then they can stretch him. If they get a buyout, it's even better. They still have a lot of flexibility left. But they do have to keep in mind that they have to keep that salary cap hold on their books. So, Mike, what do you think is the most likely course of, or what do you think the Pelicans' preferred course of action at this moment is?
So I think they're trying really hard to get a guy via trade. Get a guy via trade and then sign another guy via cap room or MLE. You know, right now I know Dell is working very hard. The issue is, what assets does he have? And then the ones that he does have, does he like them more than the other team? So, you know, maybe the other team has some interest in Diallo, but they're going to give Dell 40 cents on what Dell thinks he's worth. You know, so really you're just talking about, is the Pelicans positive assets that you're willing to trade? You're talking about just future first-round picks. So, you know, can you find the GM or GMs who think that what Vegas seems to believe? I mean, Vegas doesn't think the Pelicans are going to be in the playoffs. Most people I've seen online with their West projections don't think the Pelicans are. So can you find a GM who says, yeah, even if we give them this player that we're about to give them, we don't think they're a playoff team, so we value that pick at X level. I think that's a tough thing right now, but Dell is working really hard looking at, I know specifically, three guys to partner with Drew in the backcourt and seeing if he could get any one of those three guys. And if he can, you know, really it would be future picks given up, and then you would still have the mid-level exception. Or depending on the guys that you send out via trade, you could do things like stretch Oshik and do other stuff and and perhaps use some cap room to be able to fill in those other spots with a wing player or big or both. So I think that's the path that the Pelicans are looking at right now. It's just this market is a little stagnant as people wait seemingly on Gordon Hayward. So if he could go ahead and make that decision tomorrow, I think a couple of things will really start moving.
Yeah. I think the first thing we need to say is there is no chance they're going to outright be able to sign any, like, Danilo Gallinari is now on the market because Millsap signed for big money in Denver. So Danilo is now a free agent. Rudy Gay is now a free agent. And from the sound of what I'm getting at, the sound bites from like Utah and Golden State and OKC, he seems to be thinking he's going to get a nice big contract similar to what he turned down. Those guys, there's no way we're signing them. That's just not going to happen, correct? You can't think of any way that you could get to $18 million or $16 million and still be able to sign Drew, right?
I don't know. I mean, if you dumped Etuan Moore, if you stretched Oshik, I mean...
Do you think that's likely, though?
Oh, you didn't ask that. You said if there was any way, okay, I could get there. I mean, would I... You know, trades and then dumping could all be looked at the same way. So, like, let's imagine that Danilo Gallinari was on Denver right now and he had 4 years, I don't know, $80 million left on his contract. Would you trade Etuan Moore, Oshik, but in a weird way, still have to pay Oshik? Etuan Moore, Oshik, Quincy Pondexter, Ajinsa, and a future first-round pick for Gallinari, who still has 4 years, $80 million on it? When you think about it that way, would you make that trade?
Yeah.
So you could probably dump Etuan Moore with little trouble. You could stretch Oshik, and then you could take Ajinsa and Coupon and maybe attach a lottery-protected first, or do that with Etuan Moore and just have them all as a package deal. And basically cause you a lottery protected for it, you could dump all of that and then go ahead and bring Gallinari in into cap space. So is it possible? Yeah, and if you look at it through the context of you're trading all those things for him, you would do it. So I think if Gallinari says, yes, I want to come, they would move what they have to move in order to sign him. I think the harder part is not making the cap space. It's convincing Gallinari to come and play for you, but maybe that's something that a Chris Fitch could help out with.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was completely dismissing players of that level of salary as a free agent. Like, the way I was looking at this particular, what we have left to do this summer, I was thinking that they're going to basically either, if they're going to be bringing in somebody with a sizable salary, they're going to be trading for it. And whatever new blood they bring in, they would be signing as part of like an exception of some sort. So,
yeah, I mean, really, if you look at AD, Holiday, and Cousins, you're looking at about $58 million. You know, $70 million if you include Hill and Diallo. And I think you could pretty much get off of everybody else on your team if you really had to. So if you really had to, you could probably get something around 20, 25. Well, yeah, because then you got Oshik stretch as well, and then cap holds. But you could get over $20 million in cap room. It would just be, are you willing to go in with a thin roster and like heavily depend on a Quinn Cook, heavily depend on a Jordan Crawford, heavily depend on a Diallo next year, but you've got Drew, Gallinari, you know, Hill, AD, and Cousins starting, and then just a bunch of guys that you're going to have to depend on playing backup key roles on your bench. I mean, is that worth it? I don't know, but I mean, it's possible. If Gallinari says, yes, I will sign for you 4 for $80, the Pelicans could make it work.
All right. Do you think they would go after Gallinari at this point, or do you think they're going to just wait out the market and see if anybody has their price come down over the next week?
So I think they're going to look at guards first, one just because it makes Drew's life a little easier and two, because there are numerous ones on the market. So I guess from you, I would just want to know, you know, kind of the decision that Dell would have to make. If let's say you have 3, 4, 5 guys on the market that you kind of like, you know, and they're in different tiers, at this point, do you just go all in and trade as much as you can for the top guy? Do you kind of play the middle and get somebody who's decent and not trade as much? I guess I'm too much in vagaries. Let me give you 3 specific deals, and you tell me which one you would do, okay?
Sure.
So let's say it's Eric Bledsoe, let's say it's Jeremy Lin, and let's say it's Marcus Smart. So for Eric Bledsoe, Phoenix says, we still think he's a top-notch player. We just want to go young. We'll do matching salaries. So we'll take Ajinsa, we'll take Quincy Pondexter, and we'll take Etuan Moore because you're not really going to need him anymore. So we'll take those 3, and then what we want to do is do your pick this year and this year and 2020, so 2018 and 2020, and then we also want swap rights for 2021. So that's what it would cost you. You're picking 2018, you're picking 2020, and then swap rights in 2021. Now, you got Jeremy Lin on the other hand, and they'll basically do a Ginza coupon, and then you could give them, you know, some of your non-guaranteeds or just some smaller contracts to get there. And all they want is 1 lottery protected first round pick. And then Marcus Smart, basically you give them, what you're going to have to do is you're going to send out Ajinsa and non-guaranteed contracts. And then a third team's going to have to take Ajinsa, so you're going to have to give that team a second round pick for their troubles. And then you're also going to have to give Boston your picks in 2018 and then swap rights in 2019 and 2020. So those are kind of your 3 options. Which one sounds most appealing? Giving up big assets for Bledsoe, not many assets for Lin, or something in between for Marcus Smart?
I'm going for Lin. That's way too much for Smart, in my opinion. Bledsoe, I would, if you could knock off the swap rights in 2021, I would do that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're Dell, though, and it doesn't work, you're fired by then, so what do you really care?
It's true.
I mean, why just go all in? I mean, if it works, you don't care about, you're not going to have to give up the swap anyway. If it doesn't work, you're fired. So what do you lose if you're Dell?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to make intelligent decisions here. So
yeah,
I don't want to kill future Dell. I want current Dell to be happy and future Dell to be happy.
You wouldn't be unhappy of future Dell if it works, because you're not swapping the picks anyway. So you've given away nothing.
Right.
Swap the picks is if Phoenix is better than you in 2021, and if that's the case, you're fired anyway.
Right.
So
unless Phoenix is just amazing,
there's no way to hurt future Dell by giving swap rights in 2021. So, and if other teams value that, if other teams think that the Pelicans are going to be the new Nets, where they're going to lose everybody, be decimated, and so you're going to want their picks in 2020 and 2021. Why wouldn't you put that out there if you're Dell? Because, again, if they're wrong, you pay nothing. If they're right, you're already fired anyway, so it's not hurting you.
Yeah. I don't know. The trades that you're proposing are Brooklyn Nets style, go all in picks, our trades. We've seen how disastrous they can be. And B, nothing that you're getting back is the equivalent of Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. Like just sheer reputation and still existing ability. Because Garnett, yeah, he'd hurt his knee, but no one really knew how bad it was. So Garnett still seemed like a towering figure in a lot of ways. It's just way too much to give up for 2 guys that were, it was too much to give up for those 2 guys. It's too much to give up for somebody who doesn't even equal Paul Pierce in my mind. So
Yeah, I think.
So
you look at that one scenario, the one I'll counter with is Golden State gave up 2 first-round picks just to get off of contracts and be able to give Andre Iguodala a big contract. And now you look at a couple of years later, and they've basically given up like pick 29, pick 30. You know, if you really believe that, say, an Eric Bledsoe, I mean, how good could a team, again, if everything works with Drew, Bledsoe, AD, and Cousins be? And then again, remember, you'd still have the MLE in that situation. You'd still have the biannual. You'd still have the trade exception from the Buddy Hield trade.
So you could still have Nick Young and Solomon Hill as well.
Yeah, Solomon Hill. I mean, yeah, you could get maybe a CJ Miles. You could go take that money and go get Olenek to be your backup. I mean, there's several different.
Olenek, I'm sold. We're doing it.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's several different ways that you could go. The point being that if you really believe that puts you into another tier, then you're giving up picks in the 20s in your mind. And then again, if you're wrong, you're fired anyway. So it's no skin off your back. I just think.
So let's stop being Dell, though. You're not Dell. Do you think? Oh, maybe we are. No one's ever seen you guys in the same room together, right?
My wife has.
Oh.
My wife has literally seen Dell and I together. I don't think, and whoever Dell was with did, but nobody else.
Okay. Well, anyways. is Bledsoe that kind of that kind of player is what we're looking for or looking at? Is Bledsoe, you know, provided he's healthy, he hasn't had the best health history in the world. Is Bledsoe that kind of difference maker? Does he accelerate this team and put it into the top four?
Like I said, I think they could already be there without it. I guess it keeps coming back to how good you think AD and Boogie could be. Because if they could be, you know, if they could be what we saw, like, I think a lot of people, because of how they pulled the plug, kind of forgot that stretch when they got it going.
Yeah.
I mean, the Pelicans
were
dominant in that stretch. And, you know, and during that stretch, Drew was still trying to figure it out. And they had a couple losses in that stretch, but it was all to playoff teams and then one to Miami, who was basically a 60-win team at that point. And they were all close, and they were in all of those games. Like, that team didn't even have a training camp. They didn't have, you know, Chris Finch coming in, you know, and making Boogie a significant part of the offense in the high post. So I don't, you know, before you even get Bledsoe, I think that there's a 30% chance at a top four seed. You get him as well, or, you know, I know you always make fun of me for loving it, or Jeremy Lin, and I think they're actually a favorite for a top four seed at that point. Not only is it possible, I think it's more probable than not.
Okay. Well, that's what I was asking. So in an aggregate, a healthy season of Bledsoe or a healthy season of Jeremy Lin replacing a perfectly, replacing Etuan Moore, because that's exactly what we're talking about really here. How many games does that add, do you think, to the win total?
I think 6 to 8.
Okay. Wow.
If you're trying to deal with that, I mean, imagine you're on defense and you've got Lin attacking, Holiday, hopefully, because he's off ball more, attacking more, and not having a guy like Beverly just ripping him every time. And then you've got the best finisher in the game in AD, and then a guy who could go for 50 on any given night in DeMarcus Cousins. Like, that is, outside of Golden State and Cleveland, when Love has it going, like, that's the most devastating attack to try to defend, again, if they all get it going. So if I'm Dell, we know that 2018 pick is getting traded eventually.
Absolutely.
There is no way he is picking in 2018. So why wait until February, when we've already seen that, okay, now you bring a guy in, but you have no camp? Why not just go spend that pick now and go get a guy and just have a full training camp with all of these guys and really just go for it from day one. So we know he's trading it anyway. Let's trade it for an impact player, and if it takes 3 or 4 to get the guy you want, who cares? You know, at this point, again, if you're Dell, if it's me, I would have already not signed Holiday and all this stuff. But now that he's gone all the way in, why be timid now and, you know, hold on to your picks and not want to give too much value? Let's just get it over with now and get this team gelling in a couple of months.
Okay. All right. So if let's say the glamour names you just suggested, because yeah, I know some people aren't super high on Lynn, and I like to make fun of, you know, his injury history, and you know, I know some people think Marcus Smart is terrible because of his 3-point shooting, even though I think Marcus Smart is a fantastic player, and I would take him in a heartbeat on this team. Let's say that they're not possible. The Phoenix Suns decide that, you know, they're going to demand way too much, so they're off the table. Marcus Smart ends up getting, there's a better deal somewhere else. He goes off to that world. And Lynn, the Nets, he blows out his ACL tomorrow playing pickup. And so he's not an option. Okay. Are you interested at all in trades like Crabbe or Bazemore? Or Fournier might be a bit, he's a step above either of those two, but Fournier, like something that you could probably put together, the same offer you've been talking about, something like Etuan Moore and Ajinsa, or maybe even a chic and slightly better draft consideration.
That's the thing that unlocks this whole puzzle, where a guy like Crabbe, yeah, he could hit the open three, but without guards continually breaking down the defense, he's not going to get as many of those opportunities. Get me some guards that could break down the defense. And then I just think guys that are shooters, you know, you could get, especially if they're getting open shots, you could find guys who are going to hit 45% on uncontested threes coming out of the D League or off the street or for minimum or BAE contracts. Like, I think once you get enough guys to break it down. So, like, you look at a guy like Ian Clark. I don't even remember what he shot this year. But let's say Ian Clark, who I do like, so I'm not trying to bash the guy, but Ian Clark on Golden State, what did he shoot this year from three? From three-point land, he shot
36. Oh, wait, that was in the playoffs.
No, so 37.5% on two attempts. I would bet that if you put him on Charlotte or Detroit or somebody like that, he would be a 33% three-point shooter, if that. That guy just gets a ton of wide-open looks. So if you're talking about a guy like Crabbe or just a guy who could hit the threes and Ingles or something like that, I think that I could get a guy who could give me that kind of production way cheaper down the line once I have another guy who could bend or break the defense. So, no, give me a Jeremy Lin or an Eric Bledsoe to do that, and then I'll find the shooter for cheap. Or let me go the other route and let me go get a Marcus Smart, and then let me just have a top two or three defense next year, and I am confident enough that I'll score enough points with AD and Cousins. So I just want guards, and ideally guards that could bend the defense, because at that point, you know, Dante Cunningham wide open is a 40%+ three-point shooter. So I think that's one of the easiest things to find, is a guy that could hit a wide open three. I need guys who are creating those.
All right. So when you hear things like Gentry saying, we need shooting, do you want to slap Gentry?
No, because he's right. He just needs shooting to play off of playmakers. So I think they're going to try to do both. I mean, I know, you know, the Nick Young stuff wasn't just taking a look at him. It was, if the Pelicans had their way, Nick Young would already be a Pelican.
Right.
He would have been signed. They want him really bad. So they want shooters, but I don't think it just stops there. I think they want a creator too, but go get me a top-notch creator. I just, with Collison off the market, I mean, who's the best free agent point guard right now? You're basically looking at a pool. Well, I'm talking about what the Hornets could actually, or what the Pelicans could actually get.
Well, I was actually going to bring that up. If you were told that George Hill would come to you for a one-year, $15 million deal.
Oh, I'd do it in a heartbeat, but he won't.
Okay. You don't think he will?
No chance. I think he gets more per year from that from the Lakers, but even if he doesn't, L.A.'s a better chance to showcase himself because he could go there and be, you know, their best defensive player, and I wouldn't even be shocked if he was their leading scorer. So he could go and showcase himself there for the following year, where in New Orleans he would get probably the fourth most shots. So, no, I don't think he would have any interest.
Okay.
I think the next couple of days will be interesting. Pelicans waiting on some things to kind of go down. If you didn't have anything else, I had a couple of quick questions from our followers on Twitter. Anything else that you had on your docket?
No, I didn't. There's a couple, like, minor guys, but I think we can worry about them later. Like, are you interested in any of, like, the, like, BAE candidates? Who are you thinking in that spot?
Yeah, well, I mean, we got questions in that near, so I guess just kind of go into them.
Sure.
I think that's the last thing you've kind of decide on, and that's another thing with giving up all your picks. Let's say a world in which you get a Bledsoe versus you get a Lin. If you get a Bledsoe, even if you have to give up all your picks, players don't care about that. If I'm a free agent and I see a team with Bledsoe, Drew, AD, and Cousins, do I sign for less there, or am I more interested in signing there than I would be, you know, a team without Bledsoe or a team with Lin in that situation? Like, that's always the other interesting part, is it might not just be Bledsoe and Lin. It might be Bledsoe and all the guys that would now want to come play versus Lin and all the guys that want to come play. I don't know how players view each of those guys around the league. I would imagine that Bledsoe is a guy who players hold in much higher esteem. So that's another interesting component, is if getting somebody like Bledsoe makes, you know, some of these free agents, their ears kind of perk up and want to come or be more interested in coming or possibly even take less. So BAE guys, I mean, I think that could be, you know, any number of players, but I don't think that they're going to be more than a fringe rotation player, although we've said that in the past, and we've had several minimum players get significant minutes for this Pelicans team, so who knows?
You know who my BAE dream is right now?
Who is it?
Vince Carter.
Yeah, if he's going to take that little, why would he take it from a team that never goes to the playoffs?
Well, if we have Bledsoe, then he's definitely coming.
Yeah. I guess that's a possibility. Anyway, let's get to a couple of quick questions. A couple of them center around Wilson Chandler. It's a guy we didn't really talk about, but that Denver seems interested in moving. And people want to know what it takes. I'm not going to even try to pronounce this name. Well, I guess I will. Amar Lejubjanic asked, do you think that Denver would take something like Oshik, a first, a second, for Wilson Chandler? So basically just absorb Oshik and then get a couple of picks and get Chandler off their books. Do you think that would be enough?
Not anymore. I think it was more in play when they could have brought back Danilo Gallinari. But they don't have a real small forward at this point. They have Chandler. So I think he is pretty much going to be their guy.
Okay. I don't know if he'll be their guy, but yeah, it might take a little while to get him. Covered a couple of these. Here's one from Joe X. We keep talking about looking at other point guards. He asks, you think there's any chance that Quinn Cook could, either this year or eventually, be the starter next to Drew. I mean, in theory, it's a guy who could shoot. He could handle the ball. I know his pedigree isn't that great, but is there a chance that that kind of, you know, fifth option and guy could hold the fort down, maybe be Patty Mills light? Is it possible he's already on our roster?
There's always a chance, but I watched him last year for the whatever dozen games he played for us, and there wasn't anything that stuck out for me other than he got hot shooting a little bit from three a couple times. So, no. Do you have a hot... I mean, I know the coaching staff loves the dude. So it may be I'm just being stupid, but do you feel differently? Do you think Quinn Cook has a chance to be a impactful guy?
I mean, this is always hard because there's exceptions and you want to believe, like, so this is a narrative that I think people get really wrong. They say that Dell is so great at picking up these end of roster guys. Like, that's probably even a narrative you agree with, right?
Yeah.
So I was going to do an article on this, but people always say I'm pessimistic. So my next article, I want to be a positive one, but he's really not. Like, if you really look at what's happened, he picks up guys that are quote unquote end of roster guys, but the only reason they shine or go above expectations is because there's so much playing time and availability for them. They don't give it, like, has Dell ever picked up a Danny Green, like a guy who truly came out of nowhere and was in the D League and then became a good starter on a contending team and got a multi-million dollar, you know, $50 million contract or whatever it is? Like, has he ever gotten a Danny Green?
Closest is Ennis, I think, because Ennis got paid. I don't think he's anywhere near as good as Danny Green.
You don't think he's anywhere near as good? That's like saying, I don't think that Otto Porter's anywhere as good as LeBron James.
Yeah.
James has got 2 years, $6 million, and he is not a good player. And he didn't even wind up staying with the Pelicans, so that, I mean, that's
no, but he got starter money to play for not quite starter money, but he got a good contract to play for the Memphis Grizzlies. He played 23 minutes a game. He shot 37% from three. He got some nice rebounds, okay points. Like, he wasn't amazing, but he was a nice rotation guy for them.
My point is there are 400 guys in the world that could do that.
That's probably
true. They just need the opportunity.
Yeah.
So I don't think Dell finds and polishes these diamonds.
Well, let me flip it on you. Here's what I would say about what Dell does. There are tons of guys who get brought into the league every year who don't ever do a damn thing, and when given a chance, don't do a damn thing. And Dell has some of those too. Jimmer Fredette comes to mind. Some other ones come to mind.
Nate Walters.
But he does bring in guys who he does seem to bring in a good number of guys who actually don't fail when they're put out on the floor. They're good enough. And
they all eventually do. They do. Because we gave him credit for Ajinsa. We gave him credit for, you know, all of these guys, Luke Babbitt and what, and it's like, oh, he finds these in. And really all we're saying is he finds these guys out of nowhere that get minutes and aren't absolutely terrible. I'm, you know, Michael Jordan Crawford, like, it's going to be the same thing. He didn't find some magical thing in Jordan Crawford. Jordan Crawford just had the best year efficiency-wise he's ever going to have, and then he's just going to become another guy, and then he'll be out of the league or, you know, a 12th man 2 years from now. Like,
Luke Babbitt started 55 games for the Miami Heat last year.
Yeah, he started, quote-unquote, in one of those roles where you start a guy because you want to bring somebody better off the bench and stagger your lineups.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm sure he was the best player there.
Anyway, I think that narrative is completely wrong and was about to do a full article on it, but I don't want to depress people. I'll just depress them on the pod. But anyway, I want to get back to the questions. I think this is my favorite question, and it was the one I was thinking about most of the day. Comes from Jim Strickland, who's way too happy in his profile picture for a Pelicans fan. Has there ever been such low expectations for a team with two top 15 players in the NBA?
Wow.
And that's a great question. It's true. It really was racking my brain. The closest I came, even the expectations weren't that low. The most disappointed I had ever been in two quote-unquote top 15 players was when, and it was late in their career, and in retrospect they were declining, but at the time you thought it could work, is when Weber and Iverson got paired together.
Yeah.
I really thought that, like, that was going to work and could be, and it just was a disaster. But I don't think they were two top 15 players at the time. They definitely were in their prime. But, I mean, seriously, think about a team with two top 15 players in their prime. Have you ever seen, I mean, like I said, Vegas doesn't think the Pelicans will make the playoffs. You look at any quote unquote expert's opinion of how the West ranks right now, and the Pelicans are not a playoff team. Have you ever seen such low expectations for a team with two top 15 guys?
No, and I'm even like expanding my criteria, because like even top 25 guys, like, expectations are always pretty high. Wow, I'm trying, because the reality was it'd have to have a mid-season trade, and the performance afterwards would have to be disappointing to the people who didn't really pay attention, because that's really what happened here. Like if the Pelicans had like won that first game against Houston, even if their record had been the same, there's so much attention given to that game, and everybody's like, oh, same old Pelicans. So there's like this depressed idea of what happened with the Pelicans the rest of the way. People don't really pay attention to who was playing when, or you know, or what they were playing, and that's part of what's driving this. Part of it's also that the other West teams seem to be getting better, so everybody has to think about these wonderful new teams that are signing all these wonderful new players, so they have to have much higher expectations. But I can't think of one.
It's a great question. It's a good one. If any of you guys think of it, anything, let me know. But yeah, in the past, even in the present, if you have two top 15 guys in their prime, one coming off a first-team All-NBA year and the other with stats that aren't very far from his, it's weird that they are so, they're such low expectations. We have a lot of good ones. We kind of talked about a lot of this. So let's try to do these ones in 20 seconds. How good of a defensive lineup would Smart, Drew, Hill, Cunningham, Davis be?
So no Cousins. You've replaced Cousins with Cunningham.
Yeah, just for defensive purposes. Let's say you needed one stop.
Right below Golden State when it decides it's going to lock in on somebody?
Yeah.
Spurs might be better if Spurs are locked in with Kawhi at the point of attack. They're pretty sick, but oh yeah, that's it.
Okay. Quick one. If one comes to your head, if not, we'll move on. Most underrated and overrated transactions from free agency so far.
So far the most overrated one, well, long-term, I think it's Paul George. I think that he's going to make that team pretty good this year, but I think Paul George is leaving, so it's an overrated transaction because it's a one-year rental. Most underrated. I love Taj Gibson. I think that that's going to actually pay dividends for Timberwolves. So
wow.
I know it's not hot and sexy anymore to like power forwards who defend like fiends, hit a mid-range shot, and just work their asses off and try to rebound as much as they can. I know they're not the sexy players anymore, but I think Taj is a guy who can come in and make plays here and there that really help your team win.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when they signed Taj instead of a Millsap or somebody else, I was not worried at all about Minnesota. Like, The fact that Karl Anthony Towns will be their best three-point shooter on the court, you know, in this league, just confuses me with what they're doing. But I guess Millsap's fallen off there too as well. So
the guy that I actually liked for that spot, there doesn't seem to be any interest in him. So you mentioned Olenek before as like the ideal backup. Or not ideal, but a good backup for us. Do you think of Patrick Patterson? Do you think there's any chance his market's going to be depressed enough he could be available?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's really all dependent on who gets what and when, and then the market drying out. So there's going to be a couple guys, if not Patterson, on Patterson's level. And yeah, it's usually the guys who have kind of peaked or a little bit older, so I think that's very possible.
So if you had the choice of doing something like grab Patrick Patterson, but he insists on it being a 1+1 kind of in the mold of what Galloway asked for, where he can just get out on the free agent market again next year, so really it's a one-year rental, or you can pick up somebody like KJ McDaniels or something like that, who's not as good as Patrick Patterson, but you could lock him up at like a $3 million or $4 million a year deal for 3 years, which do you prefer?
Yeah.
I know your KJ may not be the best, but something like that.
Yeah. For me, Patterson, like, honestly, these are all just guys. Like, it's really hard for me right now to care about the mid-level, you know, or not the mid-level, but the biannual, and then, you know, fringe guys and part of the MLE. Like, we could talk about wings and we could talk about backup bigs all we want. I think the key to unlocking this is getting that one more guard. And once the Pelicans do that, then I'll be more interested in some of the other stuff. But all those other things that they get, if they don't get that one more guard and we go into the year with Drew starting next to Etuan Moore and Drew's the primary guy again, like I won't be happy. So go get me that one more guard. I was asked, and I just feel that way. I was asked, you don't seem to think CP3 and the Rockets will work. Not sure I'd agree. So explain from, Remy. I think I have a pretty good track record on these super teams. And to me, it isn't just about the talent accumulation as much as it is about the fit. And I just think that, like, I think that putting those two guys together would be like if Peyton Manning was traded to the Patriots 6 years ago. Like, okay, now I got two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but only one of them could have the ball and Pat. Like, what am I going to do? And I understand there's things you could do and make it work and yada, yada, yada. But then there's also another side of the court. Chris Paul's a very smart defensive player, but he's definitely lost a step. He's also small. They can't both guard, you know, either position. You know, they're going to have to stay where they have to stay. They're, you know, older, and there's very explosive guards in the league. And I think that Houston's defense gets even worse. And then I think what Chris Paul brings, it's like, if you think of it like a Venn diagram, or, you know, some kind of additive water property, like when Chris Paul brings all his strengths in, it doesn't accentuate James Harden's strength. It basically just overlaps. So you're not getting that many more strengths, because if Chris Paul's strengths are at play, then James Harden's not doing anything and vice versa. I don't think, and then now they're talking about adding Carmelo, like, Morey is a big fan of get the superstars and do the fit later. I saw this play out with the Lakers, and I'm not one of those people that I'm told you so or everybody else was saying, but literally in reality, I cannot remember one other person prior to the season saying that Lakers super team wouldn't work, and I was adamant that it had no chance of working. And I feel similarly with the Rockets. I think it'll be a little better because of the system that they run. But that is not, it literally any other team added CP3, I'd have been like, oh shit, I'm scared of that team. The Rockets added him. I was no more scared of the Rockets than I was the day before when I didn't think CP3 would be a Rocket.
You have almost the exact same reaction I did. When it came out, I said that they are probably the most awful fit of any superstars in the league. Like, I mean, what? Maybe if you put Kyle Lowry and Chris Paul next to each other, that's a worse fit? I mean, and I know immediately there's all kinds of, hey, they're both really super smart players, they'll make this work, and that, yeah, they're going to, they're, you know, both of these guys have amazing catch-and-shoot three-point numbers. Yeah, that's nice. You've now improved your 12 minutes. If you stagger them properly, you've improved the 12 minutes where Harden isn't going to be on the floor a lot, and you basically now have, really, in the fourth quarter, you're going to be a little bit better because the two guys won't be as tired. That's really what I think you've bumped up. That's it. And that's not nothing. They're a good team already. Does it make them Golden State? No. It makes them probably as good as the San Antonio Spurs were. And that's something. The Spurs are pretty good.
Yeah, I think the Rockets will be a worse team than they were last year.
I wouldn't say that. By the way, Gallo.
No, you wouldn't say that. You didn't agree with me on the Lakers thing, too. I'm telling you, there's a lot of things I'm wrong on. I have a really good sense for these super teams and which ones will work and which won't. The Houston Rockets will have less wins than they had this year. Guaranteed. Lock it up.
Gallo is...
Yeah, I know.
He's being traded. Looks like it's
the Clippers. Yeah, he's going to the Clippers. Yeah, no, I know. But I'm telling you right now, I don't care. I am betting. No, I don't care. He never really had a chance here anyway. Like I said, the Pelicans are going after a guard.
Okay.
But I am telling you right now, the Houston Rockets, whenever that over-under comes out, there are two teams I am hard betting the under on. And it's the Rockets and the Timberwolves. And I'm telling you right now, the Rockets will win less games than they did last year. Promise you.
Okay.
And I will, you know, that's fine. I will be one of the only ones with this take, but I will be proven right again like I was with the Lakers. So that was one. And then just lastly, I guess people just generally want us to talk about Dante Cunningham. I guess if this kind of goes down the way that it looks like it could, where the Pelicans get, let's say, a perimeter player in a trade and another one with the MLE, we haven't really heard or seen much interest in Dante Cunningham. Kind of contract do you think he could get, and how aggressive you would be in retaining him if you are operating over the cap?
I mean, it kind of depends on what we have, what we get. But, you know, I wouldn't offer him more than $4 million a year.
Does it bother you when people are like, you know, the 6'8 guy shot 40% from three. Like, I know you're a numbers guy, Ryan, but are you like me and just getting tired? Players are simply their numbers nowadays.
So look, I'm torn about Dante Cunningham, and it's actually weird that you brought up numbers, because the reason why Dante Cunningham comes up to me is Dante Cunningham plays the right way. You watch that guy and he hustles like crazy. He works like a dog. He's always trying to make the right play. But his numbers never actually looked that great. I mean, his three-point percentage has crept up and up, and I know that shooting is the big deal in the NBA now, so he's a sexy player because he's shot better than 40%. But all of his hustle stats are garbage. And you look at his advanced stats, they're a little bit better, so there's like a little bit of a Shane Battier effect going on there, that he's probably a little better than I think he is if I just look at the numbers, which kind of weighs in with the what I watch when he plays. All in all, though, I think he hustles a lot and doesn't really come up with the play as often as he needs to. There are guys like Beverly or Marcus Smart who they hustle their butts off, and if you put him into a 50-50 ball situation, that guy is coming out with the ball 90% of the time. And I feel like if Dante's in a 50-50 ball situation, he's coming out of it 60% of the time. So, I'm not a huge fan of Dante, and I was way more down on him before this. I feel like he kind of does a couple things that the Pelicans could use. But I'll be 100% honest. If you told me tomorrow Dante left the team, I'd be like, meh. And if you told me tomorrow Dante's with the team for, 2 years, $8 million, I'd be like, meh, same feeling. Like, whatever.
Yeah, I just... I don't know. Like, I'm just so sick of just the numbers. Like, Dante Cunningham's a 40% three-point shooter. Like, okay, yeah, technically, but would you, if you're down two, would you ever in a million years want to draw up a play for Dante for three for the win? Like, do you think other teams are, it's game seven, the way that the Spurs just hugged Peja in game seven in 2008, you think anybody gives a fuck where Dante Cunningham is on the court? Like, I'm just so sick of, oh, numbers, that means he's this as a player. Like, it's so not about the numbers all the time. And, Dante Cunningham is a guy that, yes, you go on Basketball Reference and you think you're so smart and you could spit out the numbers and you get whatever. I watch the games. Teams are not worried about Dante Cunningham at all. He is, he's a guy that shoots 40% because he goes, 4 for 5 one night and then, whatever, 0 for 5 the next. And sometimes he's hitting the corner three, sometimes he's not, but nobody's scared of him. Nobody cares. You're not drawing up any plays for him. And that's what I'm saying is I think you could just find guys off the street who could shoot, quote unquote, 40% for three if you get a bunch of wide open looks and they're taking a total of 3 shots a game and they're always open because the other team has basically fallen into a coma while covering them. So, I would keep him if it was on a value deal and I was operating over the cap anyway, but I am not going to, go out of my way or, like you said, to really care either way.
So are you offering him 1 year or 2 year or what?
I want him around. I like him as a team guy. I would offer him 2 or 3 years and, it'd probably be in the $4 to $5 million range and I would be completely fine with that. But I don't feel like I am adding a 40% three-point shooter to my team.
Okay. Yeah. If you had $23 million lying around, you could have gotten Redick.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you believe, the Clippers are going to be hard capped at $125 million for like a team that I don't think is any more. I would still say between them and the Pelicans would be the favorite to get in the playoffs, but anyway.
So, this is the thought that popped in my head when I saw really what their lineup is going to be. Like, it's Beverly, Lou Williams, Gallinari, Blake, and DeAndre. Is that there's not defense there that makes me, squirm, because there's 2 good defenders and 3 awful ones, or 3 not good ones, at least with Blake's case. It just feels like last year's Denver team to me. A fun power forward who can pass, can score a bunch of different ways, but, is a little limited and not too much of a defensive player at all. Surrounded by a couple guys who can get, hot from 3, Gallinari, and then 1 utility guy in DeAndre. That just feels like them to me. So
I just see a bunch of guys who are dependent on somebody getting them a shot. And Blake is above average creator for a power forward, but he's not an above average creator in total.
We're not going to have this conversation again.
I guess
same conversation for Cousins.
I'm just saying, who's going to be their creator? Like, who's going to get DeAndre all those lobs? Who's going to get Williams the open threes that Harden got him? Like, I am not afraid of that team at all, I guess.
Okay.
In closing, so with that said, Pelicans moving forward, Gallinari off the market, guards. What if we are able to have one last emergency podcast before you go away for quite a while this summer, what do you predict that we would be talking about? What do you think that the Pelicans could pull off in the next 24 to 72 hours? What do you think their roster looks like on opening night?
This is going to depress you, but I don't think they're going to get any of the good guards that you're talking about. I really think that something like Bazemore is what we're going to end up with. And I think we might be happy because we'll have shed a chic salary. But I think we'll end up with someone like Bazemore.
Yeah, the Hawks, I mean, I understand what Schlenk is trying to do. But
or Aaron Hardaway. Could be either one of them.
Yeah, they are not making, like, huge value. Like, they got rid of Dwight, but I didn't really like what they got in return. They just did the sign-and-trade with Millsap, but, I mean, you got Diamond Stone and a first-round pick. Okay, like, so, yeah.
The fact that they got anything is actually pretty good, because for a while there, Millsap was just going to Denver and it was done. Like, Atlanta was just out in the cold, so.
Yeah, no, you might be able to get Bazemore for Oshik and Quincy Pondexter at this point. But, I mean, Atlanta's getting the Houston first-round pick, so it's not going to be that great. So, anyway, unless my prediction comes true. I tend to disagree. I think, you know, Dell is in a position. The West is getting better. Like I said, there is no reason for him to hoard anything or be careful anymore. He's got to make the playoffs this year. Yeah. I think they're going to get one of those guards. I think Bledsoe is the number one guy on their list. I think he's going to be hard to get. I think Lynn is going to be a little bit more attainable. So, I think Lynn is going to be a guy that they get, and then they use the MLE. I think they would ideally love to get somebody like Nick Young with that, but it'll definitely be a shooter or perhaps two if they split it up. So I think you are going to see in the next couple of days some quality backcourt / wing guys added. And I think Dell is ready to go and ready to go into training camp with a team that should be a playoff team and see how it all works out.
So let me ask you, if I told you today you had a little ray gun,
ooh,
and you could use it on any GM that has a team that's not like a major contender. So the Suns, the Brooklyn Nets, the Orlando Magic, all those different teams. And you could at the same time you're offering them a deal, zap them in the face and it makes them say yes. They have to do it then. What guard are you, what player are you going for?
I guess I would probably go for Bledsoe and just go for it. The thing with Lynn is, you know, he might be a free agent as early as next year. Bledsoe, you could have a little bit longer. So I would just go with Bledsoe, connection with DeMarcus Cousins. And I would just go for it. I think Bledsoe is sick of losing after the last couple of years. I think he would be hungry. I think he would be a dog. I think he would be a guy that Cousins would want to play and stay with. I would give up pretty much the farm of picks for Bledsoe and just go for it and see if I could be a top four seed and re-sign Boogie next year, which gives me a better chance at re-signing AD. I think now that the Drew deal is done, why play the middle? Why, you know, keep some picks, save some picks, just throw them out there and then go get Bledsoe and just go for it. That would be my tag. I would do that. I would get the best possible guy with the MLE. At that point, I'd really want a shooter, so I'd probably target CJ Miles really hard. And then, yeah, I would just roll out a starting lineup that could and should be dangerous as hell on offense. And very, very, I mean, top three to top five easily on the defensive end if those guys are locked in. So I don't know why at this point, if you've given that much money to Drew Holiday, now all of a sudden you get trigger happy. Whatever it takes to get Bledsoe, go get him. And, yeah, just really go for it this year and then moving forward.
Okay. Yeah, Bledsoe's my target, too. My close second. If you could manage some way to trade and get Fournier, I'd be happy with that, too.
Okay. Never Google. Yeah, Bledsoe is the guy for me on the timeline. Like I said, his relationship with Boogie, and I'm always looking for guys who are really frustrated and just wanting to do whatever it takes and sacrifice to win, which I think Bledsoe would be at this point. You get those really competitive guys who have been losing the last couple of years, and that's when you could really see a team come together. So that's the guy I would definitely target.
All right, and then Mike and I had technical difficulties, but I think we've talked long enough. I hope everybody enjoyed the podcast, and thanks for listening to In the Know.
Now is the chance to use reliable energy to grow your money with the Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. Our new investment product offers competitive returns, no maintenance fees, and flexible online access to your money. Make the reliable investment in reliable energy. The Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. To find out more, go online to reliabilityinvestment.com. That's reliabilityinvestment.com.